Are you ready for the weekend yet? We have events, news, and a guest for you to enjoy this Lake Life weekend. Hello and welcome to another episode of Lake Life Weekend Podcast. I'm Dirk, I'm your host. We're approaching weekend 24 already. Summer is pretty much in full swing. Thank you for tuning in. To our new listeners, welcome to the area and welcome to our podcast. To our fans and subscribers, thank you for tuning in on a regular basis. I can see the statistics and see our downloads. I very much appreciate how much you enjoy our program. Feel free to email us at any time to hello@lakelifeweekend.com with some feedback. That's much appreciated. In this issue today in our program, we have an interview with Steve Erickson. He's the academic dean of M-State in Detroit Lakes, and we learned some really interesting facts about going to college at Lakes Country and the programs available and those things. I thought it was fascinating. I myself studied at the Baltic. It's not Lakes Country, but there's water in the air, and I really enjoyed studying close to like a grounded environment, very like here, natural. I can connect to nature, and I actually thought it is a really interesting campus. You are in the heart of Lakes Country, so enjoy this interview with Steve Erickson in a little bit. I want to share some facts about the area here. We have Perham with Turtlefest coming up. It's the 40th anniversary. Please go to our website, lakelifeweekend.com. We post regular events and all the schedules. There is turtle races as a tradition and all kinds of vendor happenings in downtown Perham coming up. Very cool, this weekend in fact. And then we have the 150th anniversary of Otter County, and there's a series of tours through the communities. Last weekend there was one in New York Mills. This weekend, in fact, is one in Perm, and I believe the following weekend or Friday, Thursday, there will be one in Fergus Falls. So stay tuned on that. Check our website for those. It's really a lot happening already. There's upcoming events. Phelps Mill is having its annual fest there in July. So stay tuned and check our website regularly, daily updated with events. Now, I don't want to keep this any longer, actually, from our interview. A big thank you to our sponsor at Ease Dock and Lift on Highway 10, just leaving Detroit Lakes. If you're considering to get a new dock or lift this year, please check and visit Mike or John and speak to them. So, yeah, thanks for tuning in. Enjoy our program with Steve Erickson. I'll hand this over, and you have a great weekend ahead. Yeah, hello. Welcome to our interview part. I'm here with Steve Erickson, the academic dean of M-State in Detroit Lakes. Hello, Steve.
Hi, how are you doing today?
I'm very good. Thank you for coming by. Beautiful spring, almost summer day. Before we talk M-State in Detroit Lakes and education in Lakes Country, can you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit your background and how you arrived here in Detroit Lakes?
Sure, it's kind of a long story, but I was actually born down in Minneapolis, but pretty much grew up in Wisconsin, North Central. My grandfather, however, has always been in southern Minnesota, and one of his favorite places when I was growing up was to come up to Straight Lake, just east of here. And so I spent a lot of time up here when I was a kid, camping and fishing. And I kind of moved all over the country. I've lived Midwest, East Coast, West Coast. About 4 years ago, I moved back to this area from Portland, Oregon, and I'd been there for probably about 11 or 12 years, and now I'm just past my fourth year anniversary of being in Lakes Country in northern Minnesota.
Wow, and how do you become the dean of a school like this?
Yeah, when I ended up going for a master's degree in electrical engineering and biomedical engineering, and I worked as an engineer for while, a lot of research within the university setting. And then I got to a point where a friend of mine worked for a college and had basically said, you know, we really need a teacher for this one class. And I accepted it and I thought I'd try it out. Always was kind of interested in teaching. And basically I fell in love. It was a great experience teaching a class. I loved working with the students. I loved the challenge of working with the students, the challenges they provided me, the challenges I could give them. And I really fell in love with the educational field. I was able to continue some of my activities I loved outside of work as well while teaching. But then after a few years, it got to the point where I really... kind of more of a competitive edge, I guess, probably took over. And I wanted to start to have more of an impact at the college I was at in Portland at the time. And so I started kind of moving up and got more into administrative roles and became a dean there and basically ran the academic side of the college. And then at one point, I got to a point where I wanted a different opportunity. I wanted a different challenge. And so I kind of moved on and moved here.
Interesting. How big was the college in Portland, if I may ask?
We were about, at our biggest, I think we were right around 1,100 students, 1,200 students. Our average size was normally closer to probably the 6 to 850 range.
Mm-hmm. But Portland is a big city.
It is, with lots of colleges and universities.
Okay. So it's on my bucket list. I haven't been there yet, but it's probably a totally different vibe or impact or diverse, lots of things that you experience, and now that's an asset, I find. That's a experience and knowledge you bring to Lakes Country. Tell us about M-State. How big is M-State?
So M-State as a whole, obviously we have four campuses in Fergus Falls and Detroit Lakes, Wadena, and Moorhead. Moorhead is the biggest campus, and we run, I want to say, right around 7,000-8,000 students a year through kind of all of our programs. We also, each student's assigned a home campus as well, and so there is roughly a little over 900 students, I believe, in the Detroit Lakes as the home campus. Fewer than that take classes on campus all the time. A lot of our students are taking blended schedules. Kind of what's happened with education, especially over the last several years, is that the flexibility in training has become really important, especially as economies have recovered and people have gotten back to work. It's been important for educational institutions to really help accommodate students so that they can work and earn money, kind of offset some of the costs of education, and really be able to pursue those advancements that they want.
Advancements to grow in the skill set? Explain that a little bit.
Yeah, a lot of times to...
You're referring to older students or young students?
Combination of all. We do have a sizable population coming straight out of high school. Uh-huh. In the region, it's kind of an interesting thing. The state of Minnesota has kind of a new data system out, which is publicly accessible and a really cool system. And you can see where students in different high schools in different regions, where they're going to continue their education, what percent are continuing their education, where they're going. Well, out of the West Central region here, M-State is by far the top choice of all students, regardless of two-year or four-year. And a lot of it is, for those students, is, you know, an affordable way to start their education, their post-secondary education. We do have a lot of returning, or a lot of students who would be considered a non-traditional age, who come in and really are looking for either to complete the degree that they started a while ago or just to get additional training to possibly move up within their current company or possibly add a new skill set and make a life change.
Interesting. Okay, so a couple groups of students, let's say.
Yeah.
But let's wind back and maybe we zoom into M-State as a organization. So we have four campuses totaling just shy of 10,000 students, like 8,000-9,000 students total.
Yep.
And you said Wadena, Fergus Falls, Detroit Lakes, and Moorhead. It's kind of like a diamond on the map. And Moorhead is the largest one, and M-State is a state school?
It is part of the Minnesota State System. It was formerly known as MinSCU, Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, and now it's just Minnesota State. And they operate many, many campuses, both colleges and universities throughout the state. So basically St. Cloud State, Winona, Metro State, Minnesota State University, Moorhead, all of those are part of the same system.
Okay. And now you mentioned two terms, college and university, just for me to follow. So university is a little bit more science and college is a little bit more hands-on, technical?
Well, really within the state of Minnesota, university would be a four-year institution, at least at the state level. Usually it's made up with different colleges where you have maybe liberal arts and sciences colleges, and you may also have a college of engineering or a college of business. And so a university is kind of like that grouping, offering four-year degrees and higher. So having the bachelor's degree, the master's degree, and PhDs and doctorate degrees. And then the colleges are, as far as the state system is concerned, are 2 years and less. They're offering a lot of diplomas and certificates as well as associate degrees, whether it be a transfer degree, like an associate of arts or associate of science, and then more technical degrees, which are associates of applied science.
Okay. Can we know, I know it's business and marketing. What fields, subjects do we cover at each campus?
They differ. There's some similarities and some differences. All campuses offer the liberal arts transfer degree. We want to be kind of the affordable answer to higher education. Our tuition is significantly less than a lot of four-year institutions. And so students can really make use of M-State as receiving affordable education for the first 2 years prior to transferring. Another benefit of the Minnesota State system is the development of transfer pathways. So students are now able to enter into one of several transfer pathways where they're guaranteed essentially 60 credits at the college and then 60 credits to complete at the university and designated degrees. So that's a really benefit as far as the affordability goes. Mm-hmm. As far as other programs, if you kind of take a tour of the M-State campuses, Fergus Falls is traditionally the transfer institution where most of their programs are centered around the liberal arts and having great breadth in courses and really having that liberal arts experience. If you go over to Wadena, Wadena has a lot of technical programs. The students are in cohorts going through the curriculum for the most part, and they have programs in nursing, electrical line worker, they have gas utility, a lot of construction trades such as heating, ventilation, air conditioning, and that's really kind of their focus. Detroit Lakes has very large healthcare programs, and we're looking at actually starting up a new one, which is medical assisting, kind of filling a gap in the healthcare arena. And then we also have strong programs in business and in design with architectural drafting, as well as civil engineering technology. And we also have a really fun and kind of big program in power sports technology, where students can work on snowmobiles and work on motorcycles and ATVs, and we're adding marine into that program as well now, and so students will get some work on outboards and stern drives and things like that. Kind of a perfect program for Lakes Country.
Yeah, the Lake Life stuff, I was just going to say.
Exactly.
Lake Life School.
Yeah. Moorhead is kind of almost a do-it-all. They're in a big market. Fargo-Moorhead is obviously a lot larger than the other communities, and they offer a lot of transfer degree opportunities, including actually a transfer program in engineering with an excellent articulation with NDSU. And then they also have a lot of technical programs, whether it be kind of automotive or diesel technology, again, into the building trades up there, and other things like mechanical drafting and human resources and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting, and as many people know, and you know, I'm from Germany, and we have all those apprenticeships, which we know the term here, but I don't match it with like being on the job and being in school. So I have an apprenticeship in banking. I was with Dresdner Bank for 3 years, and I completed, I think, within the 3 years, you complete 1 year in school and 2 years on the job. And that was like, I think, every Friday, or actually we had week on, like 1 week the month we were in school, and 3 weeks we were on the job. So a quarter school time, and we studied law, anything theoretical about the job was taught, and then the practical experience was within the company, and then I got a paycheck. So I didn't have to pay, and that's a government, you probably know exactly what I'm talking about. Now, when I hear the keywords about the campus in Wadena, you said line worker or a lot of construction jobs. These are traditional apprenticeship programs in Germany, where it is very beneficial that I have and they're Gesellen. Gesellen are the like little helpers. Yeah. So until you get your first certificate, graduation or whatever, you're just the little helper, and you're the one with the broom at the end. You clean and you help and you look over the master's shoulder and you get. So isn't that like screaming for opportunity, where we say like, hey, I need more help? And then and you mentioned earlier pre-talk that Minnesota is going towards this a little bit. Long story short, can you introduce to us to the future of education maybe a little bit, or whatever is possible, and maybe what we are experiencing in the future?
Yeah, there's obviously in the news, if you watch the news, you hear a lot about criticisms of higher ed, whether it be the cost, the affordability, and is the value there for the cost? And you know, that's one thing at being at a two-year college that's excellent, because we really prepare our students to go straight into the workforce, and we have excellent placement rates and things like that. But over the last year or two, the federal government has really increased kind of the talk around apprenticeships in general, and not necessarily in the standard apprenticeship fields. So typically, as you had mentioned, like construction trades is a typical apprenticeship where there are definite steps where they work through, and your advancement is based on how many hours you have on the job and your training and things like that. Well, throughout the country, through a series of grants with the Department of Labor, they have really tried to expand apprenticeships and into some fields that are not necessarily a typical apprenticeship field. And so, for example, throughout the country, there have been expansion into even healthcare-related fields of getting mm-hmm. students out there sooner. And so this is an area that I've been looking into, because I think, honestly, Detroit Lakes and kind of our area is prime for an opportunity like this. If you talk to employers, they have a hard time finding workers. And
skilled workers.
Skilled workers, yep. And honestly, as an institution, we're out there looking for students to kind of continue. And there's, I believe, a way that we could partner very effectively with industry to be able to shorten that pipeline, number one. If we can get students into a workplace sooner, they will be able to gain that practical experience as well as gain the theory. And there are some industries that have had a lot of sponsorships where an industry or company will sponsor a student going through school. The benefit of the sponsorship for the company is honestly that they get to have the student work for them at least part-time during the school year, and a lot of times full-time during breaks. They often help out the student through kind of an agreement between the two parties about tuition and how that will be paid or reimbursed. But really the benefit to the company itself is that they're getting not only a graduate when the student finishes, but they're getting a graduate that has 2 years of experience already. And so that's
kind
of...
In their company even.
In their company.
So they know the processes and the morale and the logic. So this is kind of like a privately orchestrated apprenticeship as I know it.
Yes.
Or arranged, I should say. So that is one version that already exists.
Yes.
Sometimes.
Yep.
So what is the talk, or like how would an apprenticeship look like in other places of the country? You mentioned where in the trades we already have it. Is it similar to what I have experienced, like a week in school, 3 weeks on the job? How is it currently practiced, if it's practiced?
It's really just starting to emerge at this point. And so I don't think there's one single model that's out there. I think there's a lot of room to kind of design as we kind of go along, figure out what model do we want to offer, and really go after the appropriate approvals then. Once we have kind of the approvals in place, you can start looking at offering something. But prior to that, I think it's a lot of quality control, ensuring that the student is learning the intended outcomes, whether it be kind of in the apprenticeship scenario where they're in industry and they're working, and documenting that experience, and then also the theory portion kind of at the college, learning that background. Honestly, I think there's a lot of room for kind of this apprenticeship model in different industries, and kind of exploring how both the educational institutions and private industry can work together to really solve the workforce shortage. And that's what we're about. We want to make sure that we're putting students into in-demand jobs, and doing it in a way that is reasonable for the student, gets people kind of into industry and being productive citizens quickly.
Mm-hmm. So I think I heard like 2 years ago or three or two or one, there was a vote in the state level where this was already discussed in our Congress or something in Minnesota. So I think it did not pass or something, but it's still an ongoing dialogue. Yeah. So where are we in Minnesota on like a state legislation level? Can you give us an update there?
You know, honestly, I'm not sure. I'm kind of in my earlier stages of taking a look and identifying a couple of industries. Manufacturing is one of those industries where I think we have a lot of opportunity to work together, and honestly work with the high schools and work mm-hmm. with industry to kind of create that pipeline of students mm-hmm. to fill all of these vacancies and jobs that we mm-hmm. have. And a lot of my work from here on out is really kind of seeing what is the state of it, what are the regulatory approvals that will kind of need to look through and figure out.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So very interesting. And I'm looking forward to the future and follow that. So if I am a young individual finishing high school, and actually we're in graduation mode right now, right?
Yeah.
Like high school is graduating as we speak. And what would a day or like how does it look like being an M-State student? Where do they live? Like how can you describe a little bit the campus in Detroit Lakes? Like is there housing or like do they live at home?
Yeah.
The parking lot that arrived. Like, how does that work?
So Detroit Lakes, for the most part, is a kind of a commuter campus where a lot of our students are from Detroit Lakes or surrounding areas that drive to campus every day and kind of take their classes and go on their way. We do have a strong student life and student government program and student activities. I would say there's definitely a group of students that is fully engaged in those activities. Others are really there in between kind of their work schedule and their family life. And so there's kind of almost two different personalities. For those students who are coming from a distance or just want to get out of their home, their parents' house, we actually have an apartment complex that's close to the college right across the street. And that apartment complex works very closely with our students. We're not affiliated with them, but they hold housing for some of our students who would like to stay close to campus. Honestly, for the students graduating high school, you may not want to live with your parents right after high school, but honestly, it's cheap.
Yeah.
It's a very cost-effective way to do it, and you have support mechanisms right there at home.
Yeah, okay. And now I think we covered the high school or post-high school student. Now, for employers or like even for young professionals that want to add another skill, let's say, I don't know, do you have project management? Or like, is there some skills that like me as an administrator I can get like a 1 year, or you mentioned the keyword certificate earlier.
Yeah.
So what is available for me to get while I work and live education? Like, explain that a little bit, that field and those opportunities or services, offers.
Yeah, honestly, we have certificates in pretty much almost every major. And part of this is really to have stackable credentials where a student can come in and say they want to go down the path of business. We have different entrepreneurship certificates that they can take that would dig deeper into sales or dig deeper into kind of another area. And then these certificates, we actually have a business management, marketing, and sales diploma, which is basically a one-year deal. You come in, you get the classes done if you go full-time, and then you can have this diploma. And then if you want to continue on, it stacks into a degree program. And so you can find that kind of across the campus. Another example is with like civil engineering. The first year is basically a survey tech program. And then if you continue on to the second year, you move into kind of the civil engineering technology field. And so the idea is to have these smaller, shorter term things that you can get in and kind of complete, and then go back to work or find a job a little bit more closely related in the field, and then eventually move on to a degree program if that's what you choose to do.
What if I had an employee that I, if I was a business owner, I said, yeah, she is responsible for these, and these, and I want to grow that individual, and then I think every Wednesday she should go to class. Is there, like, how would that work if I want to... kind of not in-house, but if I want to educate one of my employees to grow them, is there opportunities?
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, some of it can be on a course by course basis, and I'd really recommend, hey, just come on down to campus and speak to somebody, whether it be myself or to an advisor or an enrollment person, and they can really kind of tailor a plan. I mean, with the flexibility needed by today's student, approximately half of our students take all of their classes on ground in a traditional or semi-traditional format. The other half of our students are taking at least one online class a term. And so you see a lot of students doing different things to accommodate work schedules. The different kind of modalities of delivery are better or worse for some people. Some people really love the online, some people don't as much. And so it's something that we can kind of work individually with students and employers on. Now, if you're an employer that has more than one person, let's say that you really want to get some group changed in social media marketing, or you want to get a group working on kind of enhanced sales or leadership type program, we also have a workforce development solutions where we come out to your site, or we can bring people from your site onto the college campus, and we'll work with you on kind of a custom designed curriculum. So we've had fantastic success, and it's a great offer and a great opportunity for different industries or different companies to kind of sit down and figure out what they need. Especially at a time when it's hard to find highly skilled workers, this is a way to basically for companies to grow from within, to find and identify people who can be trained up and will basically come onto your site and do that for you as well.
Mm, that sounds really interesting. What was that called?
Workforce Development Solutions is the division. It was formerly called Custom Training, and really it's a fantastic operation, honestly. They do a great job kind of bringing skills directly out to the employer. I mean, we do a lot of computer training through that. If you're going through a migration of Microsoft Office to the newest version, or there's some specialized things you need to know in Excel, we have people that we can send to your company and offer training pretty affordably.
Perfectly for smaller companies, I guess, and the owner cannot answer all those questions either, and then you get like an on-demand teacher. And
exactly, yeah.
Or instructor.
Yep.
Yeah, fascinating. Really, really interesting. Another question. Traditional education, I guess, sitting in class. And then you mentioned online. I never really, well, it's not true, actually. I got some education here in the United States online, I guess, but in my back, it was all traditional. So I really don't understand the, and I liked to attend campus personally, but I guess I'm a different generation too. And now you are very close with the younger generation. So how long have you been doing online education? And like, how is it? Because the internet is only 20 years old. I mean, like, we are exploring all this, and it's a delivery method. You also just mentioned delivering information traditionally or in online. Some people like to have a laptop in the kitchen, and then they make a coffee while they listen to it. How does that work? Is it like videos? Do they study? What is online education?
It differs between instructor and course to course as well. I can say a lot of them use videos. You can see just basically direct instruction through the videos. A lot of it is based on feedback of student work. When you're submitting an assignment and communicating with a faculty member, basically just about your work and suggestions for improvement, different ideas, things like that. The publishers now have a lot of materials online, which kind of help the learning. But we also look to really try and diversify out the instruction so that you're getting information kind of orally, you're getting it visually, and even in a lot of cases, we'll design, especially with some of the science courses, we'll have lab kits that get sent to your house, and there are labs that you can do out of your house and things like that. For some of it, it's obviously probably not preferable. Most students would prefer to be in the class for kind of a hard chemistry lab and thing like that. But there are ways that we really try and engage the student online. And that is, we actually have a whole department within our college, the Center for Teaching and Learning Technology. And they work with faculty on kind of the organization, especially on online courses and how to really interact with the student and make it an effective classroom experience.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit different. I've taken a fair amount of online classes myself, and
oh, yeah?
It is different than sitting in the classroom. Discussions are different, but you know, honestly, I found the discussions do occur, and they are happening, and some classes they're better than others, but for the most part, through the different technologies, there's been a great improvement. I think online first emerged, like online classes actually emerged, I believe, in the late 90s, and pretty early in terms of everything. That's when people were first starting to get their email addresses for the most part. And so then once that all happened, it started more as correspondence. Here's your homework, do your homework, submit it. And now we're really trying to move into that engagement piece and how do we engage further and how do we develop that interaction in an online environment. And so a lot of it, we do a lot of videos. A lot of our faculty really like to put up videos, showing them and teaching and demonstrating and asking questions, and not in the typical hour-long format either. So they're going to be a lot of times short snippets, hearing different things, and then practicing. So,
Closing this a little bit. So we're teaching self-responsibility. I mean, I'm always thinking like, well, if you do everything online, I mean, all you do is cheat. But like, maybe are we also nurturing like self-responsibility? Because I remember university in Germany, it's like, it's not high school. I mean, like, you're on your own, you're self-responsible, you got to figure this out and you do it for yourself. Either you fail or you succeed. So is online a good actually opportunity also to demonstrate self-responsibility?
Especially self-motivation. To be a successful online student, you have to be pretty self-motivated. You can't procrastinate a ton. You need to get your stuff done, and you need to get it turned in, and you need to get it turned in at high quality. A lot of it is a little bit more project-based. I know when I was in school, very exam-heavy. Take this exam to show me what you know. We still have exams online, not in every class, but a lot of classes will still have them. A lot of them have proctored test requirements. So to take that test, you have to go somewhere, potentially. We also have options where you can be proctored online. And so some students, basically can take the exam, but it's actually very strictly regulated to make sure that it is the student doing their work. Mm-hmm. The other component is overall, I mean, honestly, it's we have a pretty strong academic integrity policy, and we really work to ensure that it is the student completing their own work, and we expect them to stay motivated and get it all turned in and all of that.
You mentioned earlier successful placement rates. Do you know the statistics? Like how many job offers does a graduate get, or what's the placement rate?
Yeah, so usually, well, typically the college as a whole is in the low 90s. We use the standard placement rate methodology that the state of Minnesota uses, but typically our placement rate is in kind of the low 90s. Detroit Lakes is usually higher on that out of the four campuses. It's a very strong placement throughout. I believe this last year we're like just shy of the 90% mark, but still pretty good. I mean, at that point you're talking about everybody who wants to be working is pretty much working.
Yeah.
And a lot of our students continue their education too. Transfer on to Minnesota State University Moorhead, transfer to NDSU. Those are kind of our top two transfer institutions.
Okay. Yeah. Did I miss anything? Did you wanted to share anything else about the college and campus?
No, it's just kind of an exciting time to be in higher ed. I mean, there's a lot of changes. We're really taking a look at accountability. We've been asked, I mean, really, the state of the educational system now is it affordable and is it valuable? And how can you show us that it is? And so it's really been a shift over, I mean, up to really the last 10, 15 years of really being able to demonstrate that accountability. And so that's
you as a provider, as an education provider?
Yeah. So as we, higher education now is we're really looking at, all right, how can we have learning outcomes for our programs. We have competencies of this is what we expect our students should be able to do when they leave this class. And it's now expected that we can prove that, yeah, our students can do this when they leave a program or leave a course. And so it's a really interesting time just simply because it takes a lot of good information on assessment and how do we demonstrate that not only we're doing what we say we're doing, but we're also continuously making improvements in that area. So.
Okay. Yeah. Really interesting. So you think... because I read after 2007, 8, 9, and maybe 3-4 years ago, the next bubble or the next crisis that we're going to have is actually the educational loans, student loans.
Yep.
Where, yeah, I agree. I mean, like, education in Germany is, we always say it's free. Of course, it's not free because it's tax funded. But, like, you as a student don't have tuition cost, really, and, like, and it's even open, you know, like there's like 4,000 U.S. Americans that are in the German school system. It's free to them, too, because it's just part of our educational, I don't know, we share that with, I don't know what it's called. But, you know, so we are very far away from that here. It's like all private and it's like really expensive. People my age, they have like $100,000 student loan debt. I'm just like, holy buckets, you know. So...
yeah, student loan debt is definitely an issue. And I think what you see now is colleges like M-State, we do a lot of loan counseling and entrance counseling and just talking about taking out only what you need as far as loans. But the fact of the matter is somebody who is really in high financial need, if they qualify for all kind of grants and things like that, tuition at a college like M-State is very low cost at that point, especially using kind of free grant money that's out there. But then using the money wisely. And students who work, that's a good thing. Control your costs as you're going through there, as you're going through college, and you're able to not take out as much loan debt. And really just looking for opportunities. I think a lot of people realize that companies are willing to invest in people that they like. So a lot of times a person might be able to get a two-year degree, begin work, and then have a company finance kind of or help pay for at least the second half of their bachelor's degree. So there's a lot of room out there for to improve the affordability. A lot of it is managing money smartly, only taking out what you need in loans, and kind of trying to offset some of those costs through scholarships and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well.
The other thing, which I forgot to mention, was really what we're seeing now is a lot of high school students are taking advantage of dual credit in the state of Minnesota. We didn't have this as much on the West Coast, but a lot of students in Minnesota now, when they're in high school, they can enroll in courses for dual credit for both high school credit as well as college credit. And we've had a few instances over the last couple of years where students have graduated from college with a transfer degree about a month before they graduated from high school with their high school diploma. And so that really helps offset the cost, because that for the student is basically free. And so it really helps them kind of get some college credit under their belt before they graduate high school. And then they're paying for less college credit down the road.
Well, me as an employer, though, is the value really there? Like, when I'm in high school, I should be a high school child. Like, do they actually learn? Like, is it, like, when is too early? You know, that's my question. Like, yeah. 16, 17, 18, like, when is too early? Let them be a high school kid.
Yeah, and there's actually two forms of dual credit. And one of the best forms is actually we call it concurrent. And it is, you stay in the high school all day long. You don't actually take the class at the college, you take it in the high school. So a lot of our high school teachers are appropriately credentialed to teach within kind of their specific field. They have master's degrees and they know the material. And so basically we work with those high school faculty directly to ensure that there's alignment and equivalence between the course that we offer on our campuses and the class that they're offering in the high school. And so basically a student who qualifies to take that class in the high school can potentially earn college credit while sitting in the high school. And so that way they stay at the high school within the building, and they're really still a high school student. Sure. All these students are. Occasionally, a student is maybe better served by not being in the high school and kind of moving on and moving into a different area. But honestly, with all of these dual credit opportunities, they really don't start them until they're about a junior. And even then, we really do hope that they take advantage of kind of the concurrent program and what their high school offers.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was very insightful. I appreciate that. Usually I close this out with asking what you like about lake life, or like, how does your lake life look like as a private person?
Oh, for me, it's spending some time out on my sailboat.
You have a sailboat?
I have a sailboat. I've been sailing for a lot of years now, and this is about my fourth sailboat I've owned.
Wow.
And then I also like to spend time on my stand-up paddle boards.
Oh, cool. Okay. So you're an active lake life. Water, sail, stand up. Yeah, you're on the lake.
And some ice fishing in winter.
Okay.
It's not just summer up here. So.
Yeah. So you're on the lake in the winter and the summer.
Yep.
Awesome. Okay, thank you. That's good. Well, thank you very much for coming. And you have a wonderful weekend ahead.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks. Yeah, this was already our newest episode of the Lake Life Weekend podcast. We sure hope you enjoyed it. Tune in again next week with another great guest and updates. Always check out our website, lakelifeweekend.com. And if you have some comments, please feel free to email us at hello@lakelifeweekend.com. And you have a wonderful weekend ahead.